It's time for Inside Churchill Down. Now, here are your hosts, Darren Rogers and Kevin Kirstein.
And a good Friday evening. Darren Rogers here along with Kevin KK Kirstein. And back in the saddle 1 week after we had the remembrance of John Asher, and it was, as you can imagine, a very difficult show for us to do, and many of you, either via social media or emails, tweets, you know, Facebook messages, have been very kind. That was a very difficult show to do. It was also a very difficult week for us. We had the visitation at Churchill Downs for John Asher on Tuesday, and then his funeral mass on Wednesday, and it was a tremendous turnout. In fact, Kevin, I think they said more than at least 3,000 people. It was definitely that. I wouldn't be surprised if it challenged 4,000 that came through the gates on Tuesday during the visitation. And then the funeral on Wednesday. It was a beautiful send off for John.
Yeah, it was. And what was amazing to me to see is so many different people from all walks of life were there. Mm-hmm. I mean, not just the horsemen. There were people from the community. There were people from, you know, may have just been acquaintances of John, and they wanted to show up and show the respects. And just the amount of people that were there and the turnout, it was just made us all feel really good and really honored to have known John the way that we have.
No joke. And how about the the trip around the racetrack on Tuesday morning? He made a mile and a quarter lap with the hearse, and Steve Buttleman in the stretch played My Old Kentucky Home. And, you know, it was I'm getting chills thinking about it again. It was very emotional. It was great. And then to lighten it up just a little bit, I will say the hearse was traveling about as quick as some of John's Derby picks.
Yes.
But it was a wonderful send-off for the greatest of men. And this show's not going to be the same without him. But Kevin and I are going to do our best to continue on, and we're going to start that with tonight. We got a busy show on tap. We're going to visit with Tom Amos. Going to get his thoughts on Distant Shore, who he has running tomorrow in the Arlington, Washington Futurity. Why are we talking about Distant Shore? Well, he is a new horse in the Churchill Downs Racing Club.
Yeah, and it's really exciting. The Churchill Downs Racing Club, which I'm sure there'll be talks of a renewal of the club next year, but for a low cost of $200 membership that you get to be involved in owning, or 200 people at a $500 cost get to be involved in learning all the ownership prospects of, you know, what it's like to own a thoroughbred horse. You get all the behind-the-scenes look, the paddock tours, the seats to the races, and Distant Shore is a very impressive maiden winner at Indiana Grand a couple of weeks ago, and Trying Stakes Company, it's a lot of horses that people own for the first time never even make a sniff of the winner circle.
How lucky has the group been?
It's been unbelievable between this horse and Warriors Club, and I mean, they have so many of – it's just been pure luck, and it's just been great. So these people are certainly enjoying this ride, and there's almost 50 people that I think have been turned over to their own ownership groups, which is the whole goal of this club is to check out ownership. So keep an eye on the Churchill Downs Racing Club on churchilldowns.com and our social media channels. We'll probably have some more club opportunities in the future.
And we're 1 week away from the start of the 11-date September meet at Churchill Downs. We've got a tremendous September meet coming up, and so we'll visit with Ben Huffman, Director of Racing at Churchill. Tell us a little bit about some, you know, there's some new faces, some of the horses that we'll be able to expect, but we'll get a wide variety of thoughts. Now, big weekend on tap. The Kentucky circuit right now has shifted to Kentucky Downs. What a card they have tomorrow, but KK, you know, with Gordon coming into town, visiting and dumping rain, it might be a little questionable whether or not they're able to run that card tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's, you know, one of those stakes-filled cards tomorrow at Kentucky Downs. And if those of you who are unfamiliar with Kentucky Downs, it's located in Franklin, Kentucky, exit 2 on 65. And it's an all-turf surface there, so only turf racing. And it's a very European-style turf course. There's some right turns. There's some uphills and downhills and all around. And if you can get lucky there and choose a winner, I certainly cannot. But if you get lucky there and choose a winner and put it together and pick threes, fours, and fives, you're going to get paid very well.
Full fields, because there's lots of money. And one man who likes to chase that money whenever he gets a chance, wherever he is our good friend Tom Amos. Tom, how are you, friend?
I'm doing good, Darren. How are you, Kevin? Good to hear your voice.
Hey, Tom.
We're hanging in there. 1 week after, we did a remembrance for John Asher last week. The show is not going to be the same without him. And I think, you probably say the same thing about Churchill Downs is not going to be the same without him.
No doubt. I mean, he touched everyone, both directly and indirectly. His legacy at Churchill will live on forever. But I think just as importantly, if not more importantly, he was one of the kindest people that I met. From the time that I first stepped on the Churchill Downs as a trainer and only had a few horses, he treated everyone the same. And I had tremendous respect for him. And I enjoyed his love of music, which I followed on Twitter. He loved his Twitter.
Yeah.
We liked the same bands.
Yeah.
So he had a lot of very interesting and good things to say through the years. But a wonderful man, both on and off the racetrack.
At the visitation on Tuesday, his daughter, Erin, I believe, assembled most of the soundtrack. And she limited it to, I think it was 10,000 songs that were put on shuffle. But it was an outstanding soundtrack on
Tuesday.
I'm
sure it was.
But let's talk a little bit about Distant Shore. What you were approached by Gary Palmisano, who, of course, runs and manages the Churchill Downs Racing Club for the racetrack and the members. And you were given this opportunity to did you already have this horse picked out, or did you pick the horse out at the sale or privately purchase it? How did that come about with Distant Shore?
I didn't. First of all, it was a great honor for Churchill to reach out to me and ask if I wanted to be the trainer of their horse, of this club. And I was really excited about it. And we went to a few sales before we settled on Distant Shore. As a matter of fact, we brought him out of the Maryland up in Timonium, which occurred right after the Preakness, which I was in with Lone Sailor. So that was our purchase that day, and I actually hired a couple of guys to help me, because as oftentimes is the case with a trainer, you don't have the time to just totally concentrate on a two-year-old training sale during the race this season. Now, that's different at the Keeneland Fall Sale for yearlings, but we're talking about a two-year-old sale. So those guys did a great job for me. John Fahey was one of them. John used to train at Churchill Downs. Mike Riccio was the other. It's their group. They knew that they were looking for a horse for the Churchill Downs Club, and they knew what our limit was, which was right at $50,000, which is what the horse ended up costing. So we've gone to a couple sales and got nothing, because it did fit our price range. Our taste was pretty good. And then we got this one done. And from the time he got to the barn, Darren, he always was just so smart and went through his lessons very, very quickly. I remember being in the paddock for Indiana Grand for his debut, his only race so far. And we had a big turnout. Probably 70 or so members of the club were there. And they were all lining the paddock on the outside, and Indiana Grand has an outdoor paddock, so I was able to walk up and talk to them. And although Distant Shore's works were not the fastest of all the horses in the race, they were definitely, it was a Brad Cox horse, some fast works, a couple of others. I mean, it wasn't during the Churchill racing season, so the maiden race really looked like a Churchill Downs maiden race. But in any case,
it did. It was a strong race.
Yeah, I went over there and talked to everyone, and they had all of his workouts have been preserved on Twitter through my daughter Haley. And so when I talked to them and I was talking about his preparations, it was very easy for them to relate, because they'd all watched the workouts. And the one thing that stood out was, and I said to them, look, our workouts aren't as fast as the other guys, but I haven't let this guy run the last part of a work. And he's in hand every time and very, very willing to do it. So I think it's a real opportunity for us. And that ended up being a very profound statement, because he won, and he won easily. And, now we're going to try something different. We're going to try to the stakes race, which is a big upgrade. We're going to try the synthetic. It's a one-turn mile, which is further than he's been, obviously, in that one start. So there's a lot of hurdles ahead of us tomorrow at Arlington Park in Arlington, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But we are excited, and I just want to say one last thing about that race at Indiana Grand. When he won, and I walked to the winner's circle, and the group greeted me with great enthusiasm, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Yep.
It was so much fun to win a race for them because every one of them was so excited and so enthusiastic. It was like drinking from the fountain of youth. I've been training horses since 1988, and no win is routine ever. But this one was really, really special. I enjoyed it so much. And the only person more excited than me was the track photographer that sold a lot of pictures.
That's right.
Ain't that the truth?
It's funny you say that. Wayne Lucas has talked about that with Warriors Club, how gratifying at this stage of his career to make 200 people smile and the interest that they have is great. And it doesn't hurt to have a very professional horse. I mean, that going back to it, that horse was very professional that day. Now, the speed figures didn't come back strong, but from, you know, a visual standpoint, you can't ask for much more, can you, in a debut?
No, you can't. I mean, he did everything right, and he ran a really professional race. And, look, I say it all the time. A horse's greatest improvement is typically from their first to second race, you know, because you're throwing a lot of things at them they haven't seen before in their debut. Mm-hmm. You can't simulate in the mornings 10 horses breaking from the gate.
Mm-hmm.
You can't simulate the crowding of horses during the course of the race. And you never, ever end up going as fast in the mornings as you do in the afternoons in a race. So there's a lot of new things going on for a horse. And typically, once they've experienced it, as long as they hold up mentally, which he certainly has, they improve from their first to second start. So I wouldn't miss this race tomorrow for my life.
Yeah.
And I'm flying up there, and I can't wait to see everybody. And I'm sorry to make everybody go on another road trip, but I have a feeling this group, and I've met a bunch of them,
they're game.
They're going to have a lot of fun on this road trip. They know how to do it.
They're game. I bet it's a short, you know, it's a five-hour drive tomorrow up to Chicago. Oh, I have a feeling they might be renting a bus for all I know, a party bus. But let's talk about your mindset as a trainer. When I would imagine the timing works out good for you tomorrow. You come back in, what is it, 25 days, it looks. Yeah, 25 days. And you've got a new synthetic surface. What are you looking for in the Colts' next start? And is this a ladder of progression? Are you mm-hmm. just trying to test him? What do you look for as a trainer?
So that's a great question, because it's exactly what's going through my mind as we're moving forward with Distant Shore. And what I like about the race tomorrow is the distance.
Mm-hmm.
It's an increase in distance, and I'm comfortable with that. It's not making the big transition from one turn to two turn, even though there's a big change in distance, and I like that. You know, I can't predict the synthetic surface and how Distant Shore is going to handle that. So mm-hmm. that's one of those things that's kind of a gray area, and I'm willing to accept that. And then the last thing is, you know, what has the field accomplished? And do I want to put Distant Shore against these kind of horses this early on in his career? Because I am a big believer in building a horse's confidence through racing if you are able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you
enter this rather than, say, throwing him to the wolves. I don't know where you. You don't know how strong the Iroquois is going to be.
Very difficult race.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not that Distant Shore is any better or worse than his horse than the Iroquois. It's just that he's had one race,
mm-hmm.
and you want to bring him along.
Yep.
So this is a very good spot to do it in, and you hit it right in the head when you're evaluating your options.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to it. Really am.
Tom, he's breaking from the rail tomorrow. Has there been any opportunities when he's been training in the morning that you've put him sort of inside of horses or tested him like that? Are you pretty confident that he can sort of sit a trip from that inside, being inside of horses for the first time?
So, Kevin, before I run my first before I run horses for the first time, I try to give them as much as I can in practice. So works and company, those are obviously those happen to judging, you know, their ability against other horses in the barn and trying to figure out where to put them. Inside out is very important, because if a horse shows that he doesn't care for this or he doesn't care for that, then you know you need to work on it before you put him in a race. Distance Shore has been so professional. He's been on the inside and works. He's been on the outside and works. And I am very, very comfortable with him no matter where he is on the racetrack. He's got a quality about him that's what you want in every horse. He's got great tactical speed. If the pace is very, very fast, he'll be able to sit off of it in the right spot. If it's not, he'll be on the lead. But he's not married to the lead. By that I mean he's not one of those horses that only runs well if he makes the lead or doesn't make the lead. So that quality is going to really do well for him, not only tomorrow, but throughout his career, that he can place himself wherever he wants based on pace. Jermaine Bridgman, who rides him, has ridden all my horses this year in Chicago. We've had great luck. And so, you know, it's just one of those things that who knows what's going to happen tomorrow. But I know tomorrow's a big college football day. My mind is going to be on one thing and one thing only, and that's the race over Chicago.
Yeah, and that race in Chicago, by the way, goes off at 5:42. It's race 8 at Arlington Park. 5:42 Eastern time here. Tom, you brought up Inside Out, and I'm glad you did. Just from a general handicapping standpoint, I've felt that is, I think it's underrated a lot by horse players, and I look at that in particular in, mainly dirt racing, especially horses with speed, but that shifting from inside to outside or vice versa sometimes. Is that can you talk about that as a factor from a race in a general handicapping principle?
Sure I can. I mean, I would assume that every trainer examines a race and has an understanding in his head of how he thinks it's going to go based on the evidence he has in front of him, which is the past performances mm-hmm. of each of those horses, on top of which he knows his horse. So, his or her horse. So with the idea of being inside like that, if you have a horse that's inexperienced and intimidated easily, it's a terrible post. And it's a terrible post for a first-time starter because it's such a crowded experience for a first-time starter, and there's no way to simulate that in practice. Mm-hmm. So if it was his first start, I'd be concerned. He's been so professional, but it's not. And he handled the crowd last time. I don't think it has any bearing on tomorrow's race. But speaking generally from handicapping, a lot of what you're asking, Darren, of course I know you know this, it depends on the horse's style.
Sure.
One of the things that really confounds me when I'm handicapping, and I'll handicap for the show in Saratoga Live, mm-hmm. is horses that are one-dimensional. And there's a difference between being a speed horse and one that can be tactically placed, like Distant Shore,
yep.
and a horse that's one-dimensional that needs to make the lead run his best. And I think that oftentimes gets confused with handicappers that are looking at races and deciding how they think a horse is going to run based on his past performance. Maybe easy leads in the past, and the race setup is not conducive to that this next time. That's a big negative for a horse that can only do it one way. So Distant Shore has the advantage of being able to do it whatever way the race sets up.
And you brought up Saratoga Live. Big kudos, by the way, to you and the team. And I watch that show often on Fox Sports 2 and MSG Plus throughout the summer. You guys really do a great job, and pass that along to the team. But let's talk about Saratoga. Which horse was there? Which performance or horse left the greatest impression on you this meet up there?
Well, I think I go back to one of the guys that trains here at Kentucky and calls Kentucky his home. I thought Brad Cox's Monomoy Girl was just really, really impressive. I mean, she just stands out amongst the three-year-old fillies. No one seems to be able to get close to her. Of course, we know she won the Kentucky Oaks. She did it from an extreme outside post position. She took her game to Saratoga. and showed it's she's no horse that's just for the first half of the year. She's a very, very good horse. I think her performance stood out the most. I thought the most unusual performance that went on was probably the Travers and Catholic Boy coming back to the dirt, and he ran a very big race. Mm-hmm. But when you watch that race, something that maybe makes it a bit of a detraction from his performance is the fact that Mendelsohn, who was also close to the lead, stayed up there and ran second. Those two horses, when they came to the wire, their silks were totally clean.
Yep.
And they ran 1-2. And I'm wondering, because they wouldn't like me saying this, but it's a fact, Saratoga probably has more of a track bias, and it can be anything,
mm-hmm.
but it probably has more of a track bias than any track I've been to before. I never recognized it, but I do the show with Andy Sterling, who's a super sharp handicapper,
mm-hmm.
and he would point it out to me a lot. And I would always give him a little pushback on that because I don't really believe in track bias. Certainly don't see it here at Churchill on a regular basis. But the more we went through the meet, the more I saw that it was true. I'm wondering if Travers was the kind of race that says Catholic Boy is the leader of the three-year-old division, which a lot of people are saying, or was it one of those races? So next time he runs, he's going to be a very short price, obviously.
Yeah.
As a handicapper, you're always looking for value. I think that's something that tells you, hey, maybe I'm going to look for value elsewhere.
Yeah, he was. I think most anybody would agree it was definitely a kind of a merry-go-round race and a little bit of a merry-go-round day that day. I mean,
one of the last texts that John sent both of us on a group text, and he said nothing but a dream exacta there for DR, and that's because we were both so against both of those horses.
Yeah, Tom, right. We had Travis Stone on the show, and Travis previewing the Travers, and he said, I don't know who's going to win the race, but the headline the next day is going to be X wins the Travers, Mendelsohn, Catholic Boy return to turf. And so we ate our words just a little bit, just a tick. And that happens, by the way, in racing.
As a handicapper, you're going to take a stand, right?
Right.
When I went to work in New York as an assistant trainer back in 86,
yeah.
One of the big trainers then, and I worked for him as an assistant, was John Parasella. And they told me he went on the Tonight Show. He was in California as a trainer back in the 70s, and they called him the Trainer of the Stars because he had so many clients that were movie stars out in California at the time. And this was the year the Secretariat won the Derby.
Yeah.
And so he was scheduled to appear on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and they ran too long, so they didn't have time for John. So they came to him during their last TV timeout, and they said, hey, we're unfortunately going to get to you, but we're going to introduce you real quick so you can, you know, say hi to everyone. And so he's like, yeah, okay. So they come back to him with like a minute left in the show, and they say, we want to say hi to John Parasella, who's here tonight. We're sorry we didn't get to him. And John said, I just like to say one thing. Secretariat has no chance of the Derby this year. This is about a week before the Derby. It happens to all of us.
That is beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's really – well, good thing he didn't get a full segment where he could really elaborate.
Exactly.
Oh, man. Speaking of three-year-olds, you know, you had a tough beat over the weekend with Lone Sailor. Ran second to Limation in the Super Derby. What are your next steps with GMB Racing's Lone Sailor?
Good question. So we're looking at the Oklahoma Derby as well as the Penn Derby with Lone Sailor. He was second at Louisiana Downs. You can make a case the pace didn't really set up for him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's been the bridesmaid a bunch. I mean, so much that he's made over $600,000, and he's won one single race.
Yeah, he's eligible for
August.
You don't find too many non-winners of one other than eligible horses that have made $600,000. That's great.
Right. So he's been well managed. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then on the other side of an impressive three-year-old filly, which you mentioned, Monomoy Girl, who finished third behind her last time out in the Coaching Club American Oaks, is Chocolate Martini. She breezed yesterday at Churchill Downs. What are the next steps you think for Chocolate Martini?
Well, she was the highlight of my Saratoga meet. I did not win a race at Saratoga this year. But she ran third in the Coaching Club behind Monomoy Girl, and became Grade One stakes place. She's already a Grade Two winner of the Fairgrounds Oaks. So that was a very big deal in terms of her value off the racetrack, and that was really important. She's come back to Churchill. She trained very well, and she's going to run the Cotillion against Monomoy Girl, which may sound a little counterintuitive, but wherever Monomoy Girl runs, it's going to limit the field. Nobody wants to run against her.
Yep.
We'll take our chance against her and see if we can maybe improve up our third against her.
And then opening weekend is next week for the September meet at Churchill Downs. And during the Ellis Park meeting, you brought in, after a fourth-place finish in the Schuylerville, Serengeti Empress, who was an absolute runaway, romping, easy $1.40 favorite winner in the Ellis Park debutante. Is she going to be in the Pocahontas?
She will. I'm really excited about her.
Yeah.
For number one, I'm excited about her because she's very talented. Yeah. She won first time out. She won her debut. We came back quickly to run the Schuylerville at Saratoga. It just was one of those races where everything went wrong. Javier Castellano dropped his stick at the head of the lane. It just didn't go right. When we brought her back at Ellis, we were vindicated. She ran a great race that day. She's a horse that I bought at the Keeneland Sale last year for Joel Politti. And look, we didn't spend an arm and a leg for her. She was a $70,000 purchase. The people are going to come out next weekend to watch her run. I'm going to be really impressed with her physical appearance as she comes to the paddock on Saturday. She's a really, really good horse. And it's an opportunity, as you know, it's a win and you're in race.
Oh, yeah.
It's an opportunity for us to maybe get a berth in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies by winning. And just as importantly, that race is right here at Churchill Downs in the beginning of November, and we're excited to be a part of that here at Churchill Downs.
And based on her breeding, Alternation, who, of course, was by Distorted Humor, and then she's out of a Bernardini mare, distance doesn't appear to be an issue. Although you never know until you try, right? I mean,
yeah, but you know, that's a good question, right, Aaron? But I remember when I looked at the sale, I'm like, who the heck is Alternation? I don't know this sire.
Yeah.
Well, he never did anything better than win a Grade Two, and he did a lot of his best work at Oaklawn with Donnie Von Hemel.
Mm-hmm.
But he did his best work going around the ground.
Yep.
And when I saw her at the sale, the way we do it at the sale, we're looking for athletes, and she was extremely athletic. And then we turned to the pedigree page. And when I saw the pedigree page, I was like, well, there's not a lot here on the sire side, but, you know, all that'll do is make the price go down because people are, they buy pedigree, as you well know, at the sale. So we were able to get her for what looks like a bargain now. We've been offered some very big numbers for her. Dr. Joel Politti's turned them all down. He's in the game because he loves the game. So he's going to ride it out.
We're getting ready to visit with Ben Huffman, but before we do, I wanted to ask you, this is the sixth year of the September meet. How important has it been for these 11 days in advance of Keeneland been for the overall circuit and horsemen like yourself?
Well, my opinion has evolved because when it first happened, I was like, I really don't get what we're doing here, but that's just because I hadn't done it before. Now that the meet, even after the first year when it occurred, I was like, okay, this is exactly what we need.
As long as it did not impact the purses of the fall meet. That was the real thing that you know, I think we were all worried about.
Yeah, I that was definitely part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we've got no dirt racing in Kentucky during the month of September. All we have is Kentucky Downs, which is a very brief meet. And we need a place for our horses to run, and there's nothing better than being able to walk your horse out the barn to go run a race and ship somewhere. So having the meet, as we do here in September, I think has been a real plus for the horsemen.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Tom, hey, really appreciate the visit, as always, and I love the story about Secretariat on the Tonight Show. That was outstanding. Good luck tomorrow with Distant Shore and the Arlington, Washington Futurity, and then we'll see you out at the track real soon.
Well, thank you. Listen, guys, I really enjoyed it. Thank you for having me on.
All right.
Thanks, Tom.
Everyone, Tom Amos, great trainer, and I just love, and by the way, didn't even mention, He's the leading trainer at Indiana Grand, starting not nearly as many horses as some of the guys that are actually stabled there. He's got 38 wins with only 106 starters. I mean,
that's pretty unbelievable.
He's the best at picking his spots. And I forgot to ask him. I did want to ask him one question because I think there's no better MTO trainer than Tom Amos, who looks at the weather forecasts and we'll throw a horse in. And, one guy that can might be able to answer that question, Ben Huffman, our director of racing at Churchill Downs. Ben, just to start off with a curveball, aren't you surprised that more trainers don't enter as MTO in turf racing? And why do you think that is?
Pardon me, Darren, that's a good question. And I am surprised. And it came up a lot watching the races at Saratoga all summer, because it seemed like it rained the entire summer and they were off the turf at Saratoga. It seemed like half the meet, maybe more.
Yep.
And
yep.
There was a lot of discussion about why there wasn't more MTO entries. But I don't know the real answer. I can speculate a little bit, but some people just they get in their training routines and they point for their dirt races, and they just don't like to get off their schedule, perhaps. But there are trainers such as Tom, and he's as, like you said, he's as good as anybody, that they just pay attention a little bit more to that weather forecast, and it is a good way to pick up some easier type wins, if there is such a thing. Going in those off the turf races when you know there's going to be a ton of scratches.
Yeah, like you said, there's no easy way to win a race, but Tom has that way of he loves picking those spots, and he loves those MTOs, and when he draws in, that's why he's a 30%+ trainer. But
right there you go.
So we got the big meet opening up on a week from today, 11 dates, and we were talking with Tom about the opportunity of the dirt racing. This is now, I think, the sixth year that the September meet has existed. It'll just be 11 dates. Friday is when we open, and then we'll race Thursday through Sunday for a total of 3 weeks. And really has provided horsemen with a great opportunity in advance of the Keeneland meet, which you're also the racing secretary at Keeneland.
Yes. Now, to be honest, the September meet is sort of the linchpin of this whole late summer fall schedule, and part of it is us being in the horse capital of the world, that we are inundated with young horses, two-year-olds, babies. And sometimes it's really, really tough for me to watch some of those two-year-olds train in April and May with their big fat bellies and not no shoes on.
Yep.
And we're struggling with entries with the older horse races in the spring, but this time of year, September to the end of November, I'm very happy to have all those two-year-olds, because they're good betting races. They're full fields, every one of them, and we try to split as many as we can, just because we have such an abundance of two-year-olds that are ready to run. They've been preparing all spring and summer, and the majority of them, they're ready to go right now. So I love this time of year just because of all the two-year-olds are finally ready to run.
We've had the Stars of Tomorrow programs in the fall, opening day of the fall meet, and then closing, closing Saturday of the fall meet. Have you considered doing one during September? And could you fill it?
Well, yeah, we have considered it. Just opening Saturday with the two-year-old stake races, the Pocahontas and the Iroquois, which, as you mentioned earlier, they lead off the Road to the Kentucky Oaks and Road to the Kentucky Derby for next year. But, I do offer a couple maiden races on that Saturday, too. And in the last couple years, I've split both maiden two-year-old races.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like a mini Stars of Tomorrow, but we haven't actually pulled the trigger to do the entire card that way. But it is something that we discuss and we evaluate after every September meet. Maybe next year we will pull that off.
There are more than 60.
Sometimes our stakes schedules, the way they're leading in and feeding the Keeneland stakes, you really got to be careful so you don't screw up some of these patterns. But definitely worth looking at, and we could probably pull it off. We probably could.
Yeah, there were nearly 62-year-olds on the tab this morning, so there's a lot of them back there. Ben, you mentioned the stake schedule with the Iroquois and the Pocahontas kicking it off, $1.1 million in purses. Talk about this stake schedule, and especially this year with the Breeders' Cup here in our backyard, there should be a lot of these horses that could be running in some of these stakes races that are making their final prep for the Breeders' Cup.
No, there's no question, and I did catch the tail end of Tom's conversation just then, and a big part of it with the Breeders' Cup being here at Churchill Downs, we're going to have a lot of people that are going to try to get a run over this track just to see if their horse, number one, if they like it. If they don't, maybe their second start, they'll like it better. So that's always a help, your prep races when the Breeders' Cup's here. It always helps your other stake races. And just I know there's a couple horses. The nominations haven't even closed for the Lucas Classic, and I can already tell you, Mind Your Biscuits, his next start will be in the Lucas Classic. The horse Toast of New York, he's coming over from Europe to start in the Lucas Classic and just to get a trip over the track to point for the Breeders' Cup Classic. So. Anyway, things like that, it's a big help when the Breeders' Cup's here. It does help our other stake races.
While it's challenging, and by the way, we're talking with Ben Huffman, Director of Racing at Churchill Downs, and you're listening to Inside Churchill Downs on ESPN 680, 105.7, talking horses till the top of the hour. While hosting the Breeders' Cup is awesome, it does make it quite challenging for yourself and our, stallman, Steve Hargrave. Tell the listeners about that challenge that you go through. How many stalls are there on the backstretch? And then how many do the Breeders' Cup require, which kind of squeezes you?
Okay. Well, typically at Churchill Downs, typically the number of stalls that we can allot for racehorses is around 1,250 stalls. And, of course, we got 490 stalls over at Trackside.
Yeah.
Well, the Breeders' Cup, when they come to town by contract with Churchill Downs, with us, we have to give them 325 stalls.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts a hardship on, it's everybody.
Yep.
It's mainly the trainers, because to make this work, and we have we have to kind of squeeze everybody.
Yep.
Not everybody gets what they need or what they usually get or what's typical, because we have to make room for the Breeders' Cup. And another thing that you might not think about, but the last time the Breeders' Cup was at Churchill Downs, and in 2010 and 2011, we didn't have the September meet here.
Yeah.
So it was a little easier, but now with the September meet here, our barn areas stay full the entire summer. I mean, even to where our stakes barn and receiving barns are full all summer long, where guys are paying stall rent. So it is difficult. A lot of guys are kind of okay through the September meet. Not everybody. Just to give you an example, there's 98 empty stalls right now that will not be touched during our September meet, because those are our quarantine barns.
Mm-hmm.
And, by direction of the USDA, we can't use those barns. I mean, they're matted, they're screened, they're clean right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have access to those stalls during our September meet. And people are looking at these empty barns, and they're like, well, you've got stalls. And it's just not that easy.
No, it's not.
But having said that, I got to say, after we released the stall allocations last week, it is difficult. But by and large, our horsemen, our local guys that have been with us and are loyal to us, they understood. And frankly, they handled it probably better than they ever have. With, it's not easy to say you need to move four horses or move six horses, or this division that's been at Churchill Downs for 3 or 4 years, you're going to Trackside for September and November. That's not easy, and that's a disruption to their business.
Mm-hmm.
And it just is one of the unpleasant parts of this job. But by and large, I was really amazed, actually, how well most of them handled it last week. But big picture is, it's a big deal in the Breeders' Cups in Kentucky, and it's a big deal in the Churchill Downs. And when the horses are all here and all the top riders and trainers and owners, that's a pretty cool Saturday. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a great couple of days, November 2nd and 3rd. What are we, about 9 weeks away, I think?
Yeah,
it's
pretty crazy.
I would imagine, Ben, that interest in Kentucky racing is probably as high as it's ever been, you know, in addition to opening day of the September meet a week from today, right off of Poplar Level Road, Derby City Gaming with historical racing machines coming to Louisville. That is scheduled to open up a week from today on Friday, September the 14th as well. That will begin to generate additional purse money. Talk about how exciting that prospect is for horsemen and the racetrack itself.
Oh, I walked. I did a walkthrough about 8-10 days ago over there, and that was my second walkthrough throughout the summer during construction. And the last week when I walked through there, it is so nice. And in my mind, as a racing secretary, I'm just looking. Now here comes more purse money. Selfishly, I'm seeing.
Sure. Yeah.
I'm just kind of rubbing my hands together. This is going to generate a lot more purse money, which is going to hopefully just enhance our racing product here at Churchill Downs. And I'm really confident that it's going to. And you know, I go to Florida and Arkansas and California in the winters, and I go to Saratoga in the summertime, and I can say everybody, I'm talking about horsemen that may ship a horse in for a stake here and there but don't really stable in Kentucky, they're well aware of Derby City Gaming is about to open. And I had more questions from trainers that have never stabled here while I was at Saratoga this past August than I've ever had. And they were coming to me asking these questions and mainly looking forward to possibly, you know, we'll see, but they're actually considering several people. And I think as time goes by and the purses do grow, I think we're going to have a lot of people really considering making Kentucky, you know, part of their circuit.
Do you think?
And this could be a huge part of it.
Yeah, do you think, Ben, have you heard any of these newer trainers that could be showing up here in September in the fall? I've heard a little bit of rumors and innuendos of some guys who might want to ship their horses here early. And what have you heard? If there have been some new trainers that will be here September and the fall?
Yeah, I mean, we've got, Keith DeSormo, he's going to send five or six here next week. And he says he's going to stay September, October, and even after the Breeders' Cup for the whole November meet. Chad Summers, he's coming real soon with Mind Your Biscuits and one or two other horses. Mm-hmm. Same thing. He's already mentioned running the Breeders' Cup and sticking around for the Clark Handicap.
Excellent.
So those are, and let's see. Oh, I'll tell you. Nick Zitos, we were able to squeeze him in for the September and November meet with a small division of 12, mm-hmm. but he normally doesn't race with us in the fall, in the September or November. So, you know, things like that, those are indications that things may be changing a little bit going forward with guys like that, you know, stabling here this year.
And isn't there an old name that fans would be familiar with that might be returning to training? Stan Huff?
Stanley Huff. That's a great point. I'm glad you reminded me.
Tell us about it.
Stanley Huff has been breaking the young horses for Sagamore Farm in Ocala for the last several years, but he's just one of those, older trainers. I don't even know how old he is. 60s, 70s, I don't know. But I just remember 20 years ago.
Oh, he was dynamite.
He was training stakes winners all over the East Coast and Florida in the winter. And He's a really good trainer, and he's gonna train privately for the Sagamore Farm of Kevin Plank, and he called me yesterday, and yeah, he'll be here probably. I think he said he's gonna be here Sunday or Monday, and he's gonna be here all fall, and I think he mentioned he may be looking to buy a home here in Louisville, so. That's another great addition to I think we got a fabulous trainer colony here at Churchill Downs, year in, year out. You know, you can just go down the list. I mean, Lucas, Wilkes, Asmussen, Romans, Cox, Howard, Maker, Stewart, McPeak, Tomlinson, Brendan Walsh, and I could leave out so many, but our trainer colony is really strong here. Whenever you can, you know, we try to bring in new faces every year, but it's going to be fun the next few years as we get guys coming back like Stan Huff and perhaps some of these other guys that have been in New York or Florida for a while that may want to try Kentucky. So I really believe because of the added purse money, we're going to have a chance to get some more new faces each and every year. So I'm excited. I am excited about the future.
Put your put your fan hat on. we just concluded the summer racing series at Saratoga, at Del Mar, Ellis Park. Who are some of the horses that caught your eye? Let's start with the classic division. Who do you think who's the Ben Huffman horse to beat in the Breeders' Cup Classic?
Oh Lord, you caught me off guard. To be honest, Darren, I've been in stall allocation mode for about a week and a half now with Churchill stalls, now Keeneland stalls, and my mind hasn't been on the classic yet. But oh my, yeah. Let's help me out here and throw some names out.
I mean, Accelerate was a big winner, you know, and then you had
clearly the best on the West Coast. Clearly,
yeah. And Sadler has to prove he can ship.
You got Diversify, yeah. New York, and then Yoshida, mm-hmm. which we saw the other day.
How about Yoshida with Bill Mott the other day in the Woodward?
I wish more people would take these turf horses and put them on the dirt. I'm always begging for more dirt runners. So.
Do you think our man John Asher probably put a couple of shekels on that upstairs? I mean, that was a John Asher special right there.
That was a go-to wager for him if there ever was one. So.
I mean, between that and then last weekend with Catholic Boy and Mendelsohn, I mean, the Asher factor is really pretty heavy. And that's what we're going to have to handicap our races to say who would Asher pick now, because exactly. We won't be able to look at a race the same anymore.
And speaking of Catholic Boy, that since you mentioned him, I think he's gonna arrive at Churchill towards the last week in September and train up to the Breeders' Cup right here. He'll be here. Oh, September 23rd, 25th, around in there, he told me, Jonathan did. So, you know, that'll be exciting. I mean, you don't often see a three-year-old grade one winner on turf and dirt in the same year. It is rare. So that horse surprised me personally winning the Travers, but, boy, he did it the right way. And I'm now a fan of Catholic Boy.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Yeah. All right, Ben Huffman, we appreciate your time and the visit. And when's opening day entries?
Tuesday. We take entries Tuesday for Friday the 14th, and we're ready. I'm kind of I'm ready for the live action to return. I'm tired of talking about everything, and once we get the first overnight or two out, then we just fall right into the rhythm. And we really are looking forward to a powerful fall here in Kentucky. And it just, when the Breeders' Cup is in Kentucky, it just seems like everything else ramps up, and from the community to the horsemen to the gamblers, I really expect a very strong entire fall, September through the end of November.
All right, pal. We appreciate the visit, and good luck at the meet, and we'll see you at the track.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
Absolutely. It's Ben Huffman, Director of Racing and the Racing Secretary at Churchill Downs. And, Kevin, these races that they'll take entries on Tuesday, or actually it'll be Wednesday for the Saturday Stakes, a week from tomorrow. but they're coming up strong. I mean, both the Iroquois and the Pocahontas kick off the road to the Kentucky Derby and the Kentucky Oaks. So you got the, you know, 10 points to the winner. But as Tom Amos alluded to earlier in the show, most importantly, you know, from an immediacy standpoint, Breeders' Cup win and you're in, and there are some exciting prospects, you know, that could possibly show up in those races.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned with Serengeti Empress, who is probably going to be the likely favorite in that race. I mean, I think both of these two races that you mentioned, the Iroquois and Pocahontas, are shaping up to be pretty full fields. You're going to have probably Include Edition in the Pocahontas as well, mm-hmm. for Vicky Foley, who's a very good local trainer. Profound Legacy, I think, could make an appearance in there. I heard Aiden could try Stakes Company there. Mm-hmm. And then flipping over to the Iroquois, and I think this could be a really strong race in here. Another one of Vicky Foley's horses who I've been impressed with, Darren, is Hog Creek Hustle, who really ran well for second last time out down at Ellis Park. Mm-hmm. Wayne Catalano worked a horse this morning named Maniwa, who I personally will probably be placing a couple of shekels on. In the Iroquois, this horse
you like the
really strong and looked really good. He actually worked really well two works back, and then this morning was sort of more of a maintenance deal, but he worked really well. He's going to go in there. He ran third last time out at Ellis Park. To Tobacco Road for Steve Asmussen, who's also expected to make an appearance in that race too. And I think Dale Romans may have a couple of holsters that he may send out in there. I need to confirm with him tomorrow morning. So the Iroquois shaping up to be a great race, and I think we'll have full fields in both of those races for four stakes races that we'll have on opening day or opening Saturday.
Yeah, and we also have the Locust Grove and the Open Mind. And going back to the Pocahontas, I'll be interested to see if Bob Baffert puts on a plane Durlew. Mm-hmm. Durlew was the Orb filly that was an impressive winner at Del Mar. If she does, she could be vying for favoritism. Speaking of the two-year-olds last week, boy, down at Del Mar in particular, I kept talking most of the summer how excited I was to watch, you know, Brill and Mother, boy, they all laid an egg. And Bellafino, who won the Sorrento, came back and won, but boy, it sure was not in swift fashion. And like I said, Mother and Brill in particular, let's just call it like we see it. They were awful.
No,
they were awful.
It wasn't good, and it was so surprising because we sort of thought that the cards were in the West Coast with really both the Colts and the Phillies, I think, really had a strong showing, at least in their main race. And that just goes to show you that, man, they may really not progress this early in the year. And so, I mean, but really, it wasn't good at all. And that's a line through all for me for the most recent future, especially leading up to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies and the juvenile race. I mean, what do we do now with these West Coast horses?
Well, and then Chasing Yesterday flopped up in New York in the Philly race up there. And then you had Sipicon Harbor was the upset winner. I thought the hopeful was the best of the weekend of the Colts. Mm-hmm. I Mind Control, I thought, was a nice winner there. Beat Mucho. I thought those two ran their race.
And Nitrous was okay in third.
He was okay. And then, but boy, how about down at Del Mar? Back to the flop.
Yeah.
Roadster disappointed. Roadster, no bueno. The winner was, and I've seen this before with the Baffert Barn. They had a nice, impressive debut winner and game winner, wheeled him back in 2 weeks, and he was an impressive winner with Rowait in second in the Del Mar Futurity.
But on closing weekend at Del Mar, Bob Baffert did give us a winner last week for
he
last week.
He got the beer
show.
Money horse home.
Got to give him props for that.
Yeah, the beer money was home, and that horse's name. Give me one sec because I'm flipping through my pages. Magic on Tap, very impressive winner, won by 2.5 lengths under Drayden Van Dyke. And how good was Drayden Van Dyke? Leading rider at Del Mar. I know he's going to be in action in Kentucky Downs. Whether or not it will be this weekend or not, we'll find out.
He was there yesterday and won a stakes race. So I'll tell you what, this kid can absolutely ride. He has some Kentucky ties too, and I mean, he's just been dominating out there, and I'll tell you what, keep an eye on him come Breeders' Cup time, because this kid's the real deal.
Yeah, Drayden Van Dyke and Flavian Pratt, to me, are the two standout riders out in California right now. Irad Ortiz got the money at Saratoga over Javier Castellano. Chattanooga, by the way, 46 wins. That was the final tally. Todd Pletcher in second with 19.
That's unbelievable.
Runaway. Runaway. And congratulations, by the way, to Corey Lannery, who, you know, obviously after a difficult summer following the passing of his wife, Chantel, late in the Churchill Downs meet. He started off late, but he finished strong, winning 30 races at Ellis Park to get the riding title there.
Yeah, and he had really a great close to Ellis Park. And our jockey colony that was riding down at Ellis Park, I mean, kudos to them, because I saw some really nice rides down there, so some really good race riding. One of these riders that I wanted to ask Tom about, because he rides a horse for him tomorrow, did really well at Ellis, and that's Edgar Morales, the Bug Boy. This kid,
oh, he's great.
He is unbelievable.
Tied for second.
He did really well down at Ellis Park. He rides one for Tom, as I mentioned, tomorrow at Kentucky Downs, if the Mother Nature cooperates. But keep an eye on him come September and the fall at Churchill, because he's getting a lot of live ones in the summertime, and he's working really hard every single morning out there.
And then Brad Cox was the leading trainer with 22 wins. He just ran away with it. Ian Wilkes was second. Chris Hartman was third. And by the way, his owner, Joey Keith Davis, won with 7 of 17 starters at Ellis Park. I mean, that's a productive
meet. That's how you got to do it if you're an owner in the game. They won at Kentucky Downs yesterday, too, with a horse that I couldn't sniff out to save my life. So, maybe he's getting a little heated up.
All right, so pay attention to the weather, Magic Mike. How much time we got? Are we good? We about ready? Yeah, a minute and a half. We've got, you know, tremendous card scheduled on tap at Kentucky Downs with the Juvenile Turf Sprint, the Ladies Turf, the Ladies Sprint, the Turf Sprint, and then, of course, the big one, the Grade 3 $750,000 Turf Cup. First post scheduled at 2:25, but do pay attention to the weather that's going to happen, because whenever they get a big rainstorm, sometimes it's a washout. Now, they are scheduled to come back on Sunday with the Dueling Grounds Oaks and the Dueling Grounds Derby. Their final closing day card is scheduled for Thursday. But if there's any washouts, typically don't be surprised if they make it up on Tuesday or Wednesday. They're going to get these big, big races in. So, big weekend on tap.
Yeah, and did Asher call there when it was Dueling Grounds, or was it Kentucky Downs when he officially?
No, he did. He called a little both.
Yeah.
A little both. So, anyway, thanks to our guests, Tom Amos and Ben Huffman. For Kevin Kirstein, I'm Darren Rogers. Thanks for listening to Inside Churchill Downs on ESPN 680 105.7.